My name is Charlie Hale. I'm director of the Teresa Lozano Long Institute of Latin American Studies and the Nettie Lee Benson Latin American Collection. And it's an enormous privilege to be part of the organizing committee that's been working so hard to put on this conference and to implement this incredible project that we're talking about today. In fact, if I had the opportunity a couple years ago to say why I would have wanted to take on this job and do this kind of work, this would be precisely the kind of project and the kind of initiative that I would think about. It's been a seamless event up until now. And I want everyone, we won't go through the thanks that Karen extensively gave in the morning, but I think it is important for us all to be very aware that seamless does not mean effortlessness. There's an enormous amount of work, a multitudinous team that's worked on putting this conference on and getting this project to where it is today, and it's enormous amount of gratitude and collective appreciation for all that's been done. And it's been quite an intense day. I get this thing that happens to me rarely, actually, in academic conferences. I think of it as a tingle that goes up your back when you hear a presentation that not only makes you think, but moves your emotions. It happened a number of times today, more than I can remember in the recent past. It's a sign of how intense and how high level and how engaged all the presentations were. This final portion of our program is both solemn and celebratory. Solemn because the very existence of the historic National Police Archive of Guatemala is inextricable from the profound collective trauma and human suffering that Guatemalans have endured over the past half century. This human suffering has a somber historical logic, rooted in socioeconomic inequalities, entrenched structural racism, and authoritarian military rule. It was a logic that did not, as we've heard in many instances today, did not begin and end with Guatemala, but rather fit within the larger story of Cold War polarities and of U.S. policies, from the well-documented U.S. support for the military coup of 1954 to the more complex but ultimately complicitous U.S. role in the extensive state violence against civilians during the 36 years of internal armed conflict. In this context, hosting the archive entails a solemn commitment to preserve universal access to these invaluable materials, to support and participate in unflinching social and historical research on the how and why of a conflict that, according to the UN Truth Commission, culminated in acts of genocidal violence against indigenous peoples of Guatemala, and on the myriad related topics from student activism to the Maya rights movement, to the inner workings of the Guatemalan state, which documents from this archive will help to illuminate. Equally important, hosting this archive brings a commitment to contribute what we can as university-based scholars and practitioners to processes of transitional justice underway in Guatemala, bringing perpetrators of violations to justice, strengthening the rule of law, support for peacemaking in a country sorely worn down by endemic violence and conflict. The event is celebratory because it inaugurates an initiative that's a source of enormous enthusiasm, pride, and affirmation for all of those of us who've been working on it steadily over the past few years and intensely in recent months. Indeed, we're inaugurating a model of international cross-disciplinary and interinstitutional collaboration in human rights advocacy, digital scholarly resources, and teaching and research on Latin America. It's not as common as it ought to be to find collaborative efforts like this one, which span so many units and individuals across the university. The Rappaport Center for Human Rights and Justice played a crucial role from the beginning, making contact with the archive, forging connections with human rights scholarship and advocacy. LILAS, with an astounding depth of faculty expertise in Guatemala and in the range of substantive topics that the archive materials bring to the fore, gave the collaboration an extraordinarily strong foundation. And in a very basic sense, it was all made possible by the Latin America and Latino Digital Library Initiative of the UT Libraries, which combines the Benson Latin American Collection's unparalleled stature in Latin American scholarly materials with the vast experience, expertise, commitment, and patience of the university library's technical team. This combination yields a transformative approach to collaborative curation, a vision for library work of the future, which Fred Heath, the director of UT Libraries, has been instrumental in forging. In an even broader sense, this ceremony allows us to celebrate two principles that unite our dual roles as members of an academic community and as citizens of the world, principles we've spoken about a lot today. The archive enshrines the principle of universal, free, and open access to public information, a baseline condition for any healthy democracy and for international relations across the globe. Important to all facets of political life, this is absolutely crucial when the information involves violence, corruption, and abuse, which needs to be known for the root problems to be addressed. In the academic realm, the principle is horizontal and truly collaborative relations with our counterparts throughout the hemisphere. It's been a long road of conversations, planning, confidence building with our colleagues in the archives and with other and colleagues in other institutions such as FLOXO and such as the Archivo General de Centroamérica, the National Security Archives, and many more, with moments along the way when we wondered whether we'd ever get to this day. It's especially gratifying now to have arrived because the collaborative foundation is so strong, so sound, and the relationships so strong. What you've heard from Ana Carla in the keynote address that just took place, and what you're about to see here in this ceremony, is an affirmation of both these principles, an unprecedented model to be applied elsewhere and to strengthen here at the University of Texas. Expanding the archive's classroom use, scholarships for students both from UT and in Guatemala to work with these materials, collaborative research projects on archive-related topics, and support for the Guatemalans hard at work to realize the simple, powerful ideal at the very heart of transitional justice. Never again, nunca más. Thank you. Now, the first moment in this ceremony is something that we may need to find a better term for it, but the term that has emerged is the click. And for the purposes of the click, I would first like to introduce our first speaker, Kristen Kelleher, to my left, who's the chief archivist for the Nettie Lee Benson Collection and the project manager for the Human Rights Documentation Initiative of the entire libraries. That first job is a full-time job. The second one is an add-on. And now Kristen, in addition, has been playing a crucial role in articulating the Benson Library, the archive, with the technical team, and playing a lead role in making what we're about to see happen. So I'd like to ask Kristen to come forward, and actually representatives from the key institutions that are part of this this collaboration, which is Fred Heath, Steve Leslie, both of whom I'll introduce in a moment, Gustavo Meonio, the director of the archive, Karen Engel, and Daniel Brinks, Ana Carla, Erika Castilla. Where's Ana Carla? Please come forward. Virgilio Alvarez from Flaxo, and we're going to have a moment where we'll all stand just behind the podium and the click will take place.
I'm sure I'm blocking everybody's view of the luminaries here. I want to say that I may be standing here in front of you today, but in reality, there are many people who are more responsible than I for getting us here. There are dozens of people here at the university, but also hundreds in Guatemala who built the archive, into which this website is merely one more open door. It is in honor of their work that, with this ceremonial click, we enter this new door into the historical archive of the National Police of Guatemala. If it works.
Now we'll ask Kristen to continue to explain to us a little bit what you've been clicked into.
And I need my wizard behind the curtain. Okay, so I'm gonna be at the screen explaining what we're seeing. Just because it's kind of hard to follow just a cursor, you know, going around the screen. And Kent Norsworthy is going to be running the show at the computer itself. So the first thing I want to point out, as we heard, is that this is a site constructed under the auspices of the University of Texas Libraries and hosted here at the University of Texas Libraries, and a significant collaboration among four organizations: the Rappaport Center for Human Rights and Justice, the Lozano Long Institute of Latin American Studies, and the Nettie Lee Benson Latin American Collection of the University of Texas Libraries. But most significantly, with the fourth partner, the Archivo Histórico de la Policía Nacional. And I can't introduce the site, I can't talk about the archive correctly without having Jorge Villagran, IT manager from AHPN, come and join me. So please, Jorge. So we're all here to see the archive itself, so I won't say too much about the structure of the website. Just to note that There are a bunch of links all across here that will bring you to related resources, tell you about how to use the archive, more information than I'm going to be giving here tonight about Latin American studies and human rights here at the University of Texas, links to the archives webpage, and toggle between English and Spanish language for all of this material, except for, as Ariel mentioned, of course, the documents themselves, which are all in Spanish. The centerpiece of this webpage is, of course, the archive, the extensive product of the Archivo Histórico de la Policía Nacional. They have done an incredible professional work to create the foundation, to create the building of this archive, and this is, like I said, just another door into that building. With well over 10, well, okay. So if we go into the search button, click into the search button, that's actually the entrance into the archive itself. With well over 10 million images from documents from an estimated 80 million in the archive, we need to apply archival principles, archival art and science in order to understand this quantity of material. And this is the work that comes to us already done by the archive itself. Two of these principles are provenance and original order. And the construction of the website follows those principles as they have been created professionally by the archive, by the AHPN in Guatemala. And with the consultation, I have to say, of archivist Trudy Peterson, who was very important in directing all of this. When we look at the site, if we scroll up a little bit, we see, the first thing we see at the top is a search button. But I want to stress that this is not Google. We are not Google. The experience of using this online archive is as close as we could make it, the experience of someone using the original archive itself. There's very limited indexing of metadata that can allow direct access to documents in the archive. So it's very important to understand the context of the National Police Archive, the organization of the National Police themselves, the organizational structure of the documents here in the archive. And to understand that identifying any materials, looking for any documents, and potentially not finding what you're looking for, takes a long time. And online, we're not used to it. We're used to immediate response, but in this archive, it's going to take a lot of work to get documents if they do exist there. So I want to explain a little bit about the structure of the archive. It's hierarchical based on the structure of the National Police as an organization. There's some at the top here. So there are record groups here with a number. Some of these are geographically distributed. And if we scroll down, some of them are part of the central police, national police organization. If we click on any one of these record groups, so for example, the Archivos Inspectoría General, it expands out to show the subgroups or subseries of documents. And there's a little information about each of these to orient you, to tell you what documents you'll be seeing within them. So for example, if we click on there's a finding aid link next to each of these entrants, and we click on finding aid, and we will see a document written by the National Police Archive, staff at the National, archivists at the archive, that provides an international standard of information about the records that are in this particular section of the archive. The international standard of archival description is the standard that they've followed, and the finding aid provides that information in a very structured order. If we go back to the record series that we were looking at, in this case, and I know y'all can't see it, so let's see, I'm going to read some here. We're in a section that says GTPN, the Guatemala Policía Nacional. Record group 32, Archivos Inspectoría General. Series 10, Planes Operativas de Trabajo e Informes. Within that series, there's a whole list of documents. There's a table that provides access to the number of documents. And if you remember back to the original view, this is one small section of this incredibly long list of record groups and record series. So within this record series, if we scroll to, well, if we start at this, look at this first entry here, the first file. It's a file of materials dated 1978 to 1985, and each of these links is an individual document within that file. So if we click on one of those documents links, we'll pull up a page viewer and be able to look at the document. By clicking down in the corner, we can look in a little bit closer. Y ahora si Jorge, ¿puedes decir algo sobre los documentos?
Claro, buenas tardes. Primero, te invito a decir la dirección del sitio porque no la hemos contado y está transmitiéndose en vivo. Así que, if you can say the URL of the...
Oh, the URL, well, the URL is ahpn.lib.utexas.edu. The Archivo Histórico de la Policía Nacional at the Library of the University of Texas at Austin.
Thank you. Okay. Este es un documento cotidiano, es un plan de operaciones, es un documento que se producía muy permanentemente en la policía, producía sus planes de operaciones. Este es específico para una fecha en Guatemala muy especial, que es la Quema del Diablo. La Quema del Diablo es el 7 de diciembre. Es un día donde los guatemaltecos sacamos papeles viejos y cosas arruinadas de la casa para quemarlos en la calle para ahuyentar los malos espíritus. Es una fecha muy bonita. No archivos, obviamente. Y este es un plan de operaciones de lo que la policía tenía que hacer ese día. Era el decirle a todos sus agentes lo que tenían que hacer ese día. Todos los documentos del archivo tienen algo interesante. Este en especial pinta un poquito lo que la policía hacía cotidianamente. Dice, en una parte dice fuerzas enemigas, y dice las fuerzas enemigas, dice, son todos los grupos de delincuentes subversivos y o comunes que operan en el territorio nacional. Eso eran sus fuerzas enemigas, y sus fuerzas amigas eran el Ejército Nacional y la Guardia de Hacienda. Se habla solo el documento, creo que no tendría más que decir.
It's interesting that, yeah, for the police to have part of the population be their enemies, it's a very interesting view into the organization. So we got here by browsing through the structure of the archive, and understanding that structure is very important. But, and I downplayed a little bit at the beginning, but there is a way to get into this information through searching the metadata. And it's not insignificant, really. We currently have a database of more than 500,000 names that are searchable and lead directly to some documents in the archive. And we can demonstrate how that works now. There are two databases that feed into this. One is for the registro maestro de fichas, the register cards for one section of the archive of the National Police, and there's a cadena de mando database that provides metadata about the police themselves, the police officers. But we can search for, enter a name and search for it. And Jorge said that one of the popular searches is for Ernesto Guevara. So we enter Ernesto Guevara into the search. And now what shows up on the right is those locations within the archive that have results for this search of Ernesto Guevara. By clicking down through documents into the Registro Maestro de Fichas, we see a list of the files that include those two search terms. And if we go down to the bottom here, we have seven documents in this alphabetical file. And if we click on the first one there, we'll pull up a ficha for this individual. Ernesto Guevara, described otherwise as Argentino Che Guevara. Jorge.
Okay. Este es un documento muy común en el archivo. Hay una gran serie de documentales, hay varias series documentales sobre fichas de este tipo. Estas fichas son parte del control que ejercía la policía sobre la ciudadanía guatemalteca y obviamente no solo sobre la guatemalteca. Hay fichas de extranjeros, hay fichas de organizaciones, hay fichas de etcétera, etcétera. Y solo esta serie documental contiene más de 850,000 fichas. Así que hay para entretenerse leyendo. El documento este es información de 1960 relacionada al Che Guevara, donde informan que él le envió dinero a Guatemala y luego sobre un desenvolvimiento subversivo. ¿Sí? Son informaciones que están, estas fichas básicamente son un índice de información, es un pequeño resumen donde dice asunto, es el subject. Luego al lado izquierdo, en medio de la tarjeta, tiene la carpeta, es el folder donde está organizada la información. Este es un archivo muy, muy organizado de la policía. Originalmente esto sí estaba muy organizado, el archivo del cuerpo de detectives. Cada asunto refiere a una carpeta que es donde la policía tenía guardado los documentos propiamente relacionados a lo que pusieron en el asunto. Vamos.
And we won't do it. It, as I said, it takes a long time to do this research. We won't do it. But armed with this information, with the carpeta, the numero of the document, and the date of the document, one can go back and do a search for this carpeta, look within that, browse down within that to find the date range, and look within that to find the document number. It doesn't. So I also mentioned that we have 10 million images from the archive, and there are 80 million total. It won't work for all of them because not all of the documents have been scanned to that extent.
Creo que es importante hacer una aclaración. La mayoría de documentos que están digitalizados son del periodo 1975 a 1985. Que es el periodo de mayor, según la Comisión de Esclarecimiento Histórico, el periodo de mayor violencia en el país. Se dio prioridad a esos documentos y eso es el gran porcentaje de lo que está escaneado.
We looked first for fun example of Che Guevara, but we can also find very serious information in the archive. So, for example, we know from, we heard a little bit earlier about the syphilis experiments that were done in Guatemala. And we know from the records of Dr. Cutler that one of the women who was experimented on was named Julia Gonzalez. So we can search for Julia. And in this case, we see that we have 705 hits with the names Julia Gonzalez. So it can take a while to find the particular one we're looking for. We've done that research for you already. And we happen to know that she is in the file alphabetical Gonzalez Salmeron. And this particular document. And we can see her ficha here.
Este documento, esta persona, esta mujer, fue una trabajadora del sexo que tuvo parte de los experimentos del doctor Kotler, que la doctora Reverby nos contó hoy por la mañana. Y básicamente lo que hacen los documentos de Guatemala es confirmar lo que dicen los documentos de los Estados Unidos. Este es un registro de 1945, el segundo registro es un registro de 1945, donde ella aparece sindicada de ejercer la prostitución. Llama la atención que este documento está guardado en la carpeta de la Secretaría de la Defensa Nacional. La verdad es que no sabemos por qué, pero es llamativo. Luego el siguiente registro no tiene que ver con prostitución, pero también es llamativo. Está en la carpeta de presidencia, la presidencia de la República, y dice que en el 57 está el registro de que ella forma parte del comité católico que funcionaba en el mercado jardín de la presidenta. Tiene un registro por formar parte de un comité católico. También supongo que debe haber sido mal visto. Si vamos más adelante, ahí siguen varios reportes de ella, pero lo lamentable es que esta mujer fue en el año 1972, un poquito más arriba, en el año 1962, vuelve a ser detenida por ejercer la prostitución clandestina. Eso quiere decir que 17 años después del contagio en los experimentos, ella seguía ejerciendo la prostitución y los registros dicen que las prostitutas no fueron tratadas por el doctor Kotler para curarla. Así que esos son los documentos que hay en el archivo.
So that's how the search works, and that's how most people are going to use it. But I want to stress that that's not sufficient for using this archive. We've heard a lot about the case of Fernando Garcia today, and it was featured in Granito last night. And we know that a very significant document in that case is in a completely different part of the archive. Back from the main page, if we go all the way to the bottom, We can close this at the top here, actually. We can close the GTPN and go to the años. This is a group of documents that were scanned chronologically. And in 1984, there are, again, a large number of documents scanned. And you can imagine the work that went into finding this document in support of the Garcia case. If we go down and down the page to find the chronological section for 1984, February 1st through 28th of December, and click on the document, we see there's a 661-page document there. Just finding something in 661 pages is hard enough. At the bottom of the website, there's a page turner device, and we can click on there and go to what we happen to know is interesting on page 312 and 313.
No me quiere jalar.
No me Probably an issue with the finger thing. Llegué a la
263.
312.
Esta cosa está difícil de maniobrar. No sé si voy a poder extinguirlo.
Real one, just, we can just go to the next page and get right. There's also a button here where you can go to the next page and the next page as you're reading along. So, here we get to page 312.
Este documento es uno de los documentos más importantes del caso Fernando García. Obviamente coincido con Christian, hay que reconocer la increíble labor del equipo de trabajo del Archivo Histórico de la Policía Nacional. Encontrar esta información no es nada fácil, nada sencillo, requiere muchísimo trabajo. Y este documento es uno de los 667 documentos que contiene el expediente de Fernando García, pero es un documento clave. En la segunda página de este de un documentito que estaba engrapado, el documento este trata sobre el jefe del cuerpo hace un ofrecimiento de personas que podrían recibir una condecoración, ser condecoradas por actos heroicos en su accionar como policías. La acción donde fue detenido Fernando García en ningún documento aparece registrada. Dice que ese día no pasó nada en el lugar, en el operativo donde estaba la policía. Sin embargo, en este documento, que es posterior, bastante de varios días después del hecho, dice que el número 31 dice agente Héctor Roderico Ramírez Ríos, el 32 Alfonso Guillermo de León, el 33 Hugo Rolando Gómez Osorio y el 34 Abraham Lancerio Gómez, el primero y el cuarto están detenidos, ya están presos y condenados el día de hoy. Dice que pueden ser promovidos, pueden ser premiados, porque el 18 de febrero de 1984, a las 11 horas, haciendo un operativo en el mercado del Guarda, zona 11, fueron atacados por dos subversivos a quienes se les incautó propaganda subversiva y armas de fuego. Ese hecho, ese día, ese lugar, a esa hora, las dos personas son Fernando García y su acompañante. Eso ubicó a esos policías en el lugar del hecho, en el momento, en la hora y el lugar del hecho en que ocurrió.
So, just a brief look at, you know, four documents among the millions available currently, and I wanted to say a couple words about next steps for this website. This is only the beginning. There will be an estimated 2.7 million new images each year coming in, being scanned by the archive, assigned metadata, finding aids written, added to the archive, made available. We've already received another 300,000 names to add to the index database search. And we have great work ahead of us to improve access to this material, to make it even more useful for scholars, researchers, family members in Guatemala, in support of scholarship and human rights activism, and we definitely are looking forward to doing that. Thank you very much.
I'd now like to introduce again, for those of you that weren't here in the morning, Gustavo Meoño. Gustavo is the coordinator of the archive. And he, as we've heard from many different angles, from many different dimensions, he has done an incredible visionary service to the archive, to Guatemala, to the world, in providing this leadership, prescience, this vision that transformed that warehouse of millions of documents that were in a state of decay, and seeing into the future and seeing the possibility And then working along with 150 other members of the, currently of the police archive, on providing the leadership necessary to bring the transformation to where it is today and to envision the future. It's a great pleasure now to ask Gustavo to come to the podium and provide a perspective on the archive and on this project. Gustavo.
Agradezco a todas y a todos que han tenido el interés por acompañar esta actividad durante todo el día y abusando un poquito de su paciencia y de su resistencia, me toca hacer una síntesis final sobre el archivo histórico de la Policía Nacional. Para nosotros es muy importante porque hemos estado manejando de manera un tanto fragmentada los diferentes aspectos que voy a tratar de sintetizar lo más posible en este resumen final. Y para esto es necesario hacer algo de historia y recordar que en julio de 2005 se realizó el importante hallazgo de un voluminoso archivo que corresponde a la documentación histórico-administrativa de la Policía Nacional. En medio de humedad y plagas de todo tipo, los documentos se encontraban apilados en pésimas condiciones para su conservación en las instalaciones de lo que a principio de los años 80 se proyectó como el edificio para el Hospital de la Policía Nacional en la zona 6 de la capital guatemalteca. En este acervo documental, que mide más de 7.900 metros lineales de paquetes de documentos, se encontraron registros que datan desde 1882 y se extienden hasta 1997. En la actualidad, el archivo continúa alimentándose con documentación histórica proveniente de distintas dependencias de la Policía Nacional Civil. Los aproximadamente 80 millones de folios reunidos y en proceso de rescate tienen una importancia incuestionable desde los puntos de vista histórico, cultural y científico. Agregado a ello, desde la perspectiva de la defensa de los derechos humanos, resulta particularmente importante investigar sobre la base de los documentos de este archivo el período histórico que corresponde al conflicto armado interno en Guatemala, en el cual la Policía Nacional y la Policía Judicial, como parte de sus estructuras, fueron reiteradamente señalados de ser cuerpos ejecutores de graves y sistemáticas violaciones a los derechos humanos que aún no han sido esclarecidas. A lo largo de 6 años y medio de trabajo, los principales esfuerzos han girado en torno a la conservación, identificación, organización y descripción archivística de los documentos de este archivo histórico. El fin detrás de estas acciones está centrado en garantizar el acceso libre a las imágenes digitales de los documentos por parte de instituciones del Estado, las y los investigadores interesados y la ciudadanía que deseen hacer efectivo su derecho a conocer la verdad. El acceso a la información digitalizada de un archivo oficial tan amplio y completo modifica significativamente los procesos de recuperación de la memoria histórica y política, amplía de manera sustantiva las posibilidades de conocer la verdad de lo ocurrido en el contexto del conflicto armado interno y abre nuevos cauces para impulsar procesos judiciales en contra de los responsables de crímenes de lesa humanidad cometidos en Guatemala. A partir de julio del año 2009, la titularidad del archivo pasó del Ministerio de Gobernación al Ministerio de Cultura y Deportes bajo la rectoría del Archivo General de Centroamérica. De enorme importancia ha sido desde ese momento nuestra permanente relación de trabajo y colaboración con el Archivo General Nacional de Guatemala, que es el Archivo General de Centroamérica. Desde esa misma fecha empezó a funcionar la unidad de acceso a la información del Archivo Histórico de la Policía Nacional, con lo cual se alcanzó el gran objetivo de posibilitar el conocimiento público del contenido de, ya al día de hoy, 13 millones y medio de documentos digitalizados. El principal usuario del archivo es en la actualidad el Ministerio Público, al mismo tiempo que acuden en búsqueda de información centenares de víctimas sobrevivientes y familiares de víctimas de violaciones a los derechos humanos. Otro tanto ocurre con diversas instituciones oficiales, organizaciones de la sociedad civil, entidades académicas y numerosas investigadoras e investigadores guatemaltecos e internacionales. Hasta el 30 de noviembre de este año 2011, la unidad de acceso a la información del AHPN había atendido un total acumulado de cerca de 6.000 requerimientos de información, habiendo respondido a los usuarios con la entrega de más de 350.000 páginas de información. Algunas solicitudes son muy amplias y muy voluminosas, y también le damos importancia a los documentos de contexto para entender a veces la importancia de un solo documento. Además de aportar documentos que tienen utilidad como elementos para la investigación criminal y la persecución penal, nuestro equipo de trabajo presta servicios de gran importancia mediante análisis archivísticos y pericias técnicas que se requieren para sustentar diferentes procesos judiciales. Desde el Archivo Histórico de la Policía Nacional se ha respondido ya a requerimientos de los fiscales del Ministerio Público y de los jueces para hacer peritajes en juicios muy importantes en nuestro país. Desde el pasado 3 de mayo está instalada y en funcionamiento en el AHPN una oficina de investigadores del Ministerio Público que hacen su trabajo a tiempo completo investigando en este acervo. Es muy importante destacar que mediante un acuerdo de cooperación suscrito entre el Ministerio de Cultura y Deportes y el Gobierno de Suiza, una copia completa de los 13 millones y medio de imágenes de documentos que hemos digitalizado se encuentra depositada en los archivos federales de Suiza. Ello garantiza, y había sido hasta el día de hoy, hasta hace breves instantes, pues nuestra mayor garantía de seguridad y resguardo técnico de esos millones de imágenes de documentos pletóricos de información. Pero esa información no está accesible, es un backup, es un respaldo en los archivos federales de Suiza. Hoy, además de resguardados, están accesibles y estoy muy emocionado. Las instalaciones que albergan el archivo histórico presentan grandes problemas estructurales, el edificio, y grandes carencias por el abandono desde hace más de 25 años de una obra a medio edificar. Sin embargo, el área en su conjunto tiene una gran significación histórica, porque allí funcionaron la Guardia de Hacienda, que fue otro cuerpo represivo terrible en Guatemala, la Policía Militar Ambulante, la vieja escuela de la Policía Nacional, el Comando de Operaciones Especiales y el Sexto Cuerpo de la Policía Nacional. Y ahí encontramos el archivo histórico que hoy estamos poniendo a disposición del mundo. Habían otras estructuras de la seguridad del Estado también en ese lugar. Al mismo tiempo, aunque todavía de manera no oficial, se cuenta con testimonios e indicios de que en esos predios e instalaciones funcionaron cárceles clandestinas y centros de tortura donde se cometieron múltiples violaciones a los derechos humanos, crímenes de lesa humanidad. Es ampliamente conocido, por ejemplo, la existencia y el funcionamiento del sitio clandestino denominado La Isla, donde en los años 80 permanecieron detenidos ilegalmente, fueron torturados y ejecutados extrajudicialmente centenares de mujeres y hombres víctimas del terrorismo de Estado. Por todo ello, resultan tan relevantes, tiene tanta significación en estos momentos los esfuerzos encaminados a crear las condiciones para la conversión de esos predios y esas instalaciones en el Memorial para la Concordia, que es un proyecto que de manera simultánea, de manera paralela a la recuperación del Archivo Histórico de la Policía Nacional, estamos llevando adelante. Y es para mí muy importante que esté con nosotros Julio Solórzano Fopa, con quien hemos trabajado de lleno en este esfuerzo. Además, Julio tiene el gran mérito personal de haber abierto inicialmente la relación con la Universidad de Texas en Austin, y a partir de ese día, de la primer visita que Karen Engel hizo a Guatemala, pues hemos recorrido ya este largo camino que está fructificando de manera tan hermosa el día de hoy. En el ámbito de las organizaciones de la sociedad guatemalteca, el archivo mantiene relación de colaboración y consulta con varias de las más importantes instancias defensoras de los derechos humanos, investigativas y académicas, de quienes en todo momento hemos recibido apoyo, acompañamiento y solidaridad. Conjuntamente con la Facultad Latinoamericana de Ciencias Sociales, FLACSO, el Centro de Análisis Forense y Ciencias Aplicadas y la institución Sinergia NOG, el Archivo Histórico de la Policía Nacional ha participado en el desarrollo del curso superior en investigación archivística y derechos humanos. Ya se mencionó antes este logro sin precedentes también en Guatemala. Este avance en la formación académica de una nueva generación de archiveras y archiveros en nuestro país en la perspectiva de los derechos humanos. Después de 2 años de trabajo, están culminando el curso un grupo de más de 40 estudiantes que se han capacitado para la investigación con documentos de archivo en función de las pericias técnicas judiciales. Es una iniciativa sin precedentes, por lo menos en América Latina, pero hemos hecho otras consultas y pareciera que no es una actividad que se haya desarrollado en otras latitudes. Así que creemos que estamos haciendo colectivamente también aquí una contribución muy importante. El archivo ha contado desde su descubrimiento en el año 2005 con el apoyo permanente de instancias de la cooperación internacional. En la mayoría de los casos, el aporte financiero ha estado acompañado de asesorías técnicas y, algo fundamental, de apoyo político, lo que resulta fundamental por las características particulares del proceso que nos toca llevar adelante con sus riesgos inherentes. Debo decir también que en términos de acompañamiento juegan un papel fundamental los consejos consultivos nacional e internacional. El Consejo Consultivo Nacional está conformado por 11 destacadas personalidades guatemaltecas, una de ellas, nuestra queridísima compañera Irma Alicia Velázquez Nimatuj, que está con nosotros también el día de hoy. y la función de este consejo es asesorar al archivo histórico en diferentes iniciativas orientadas a asegurar en el mediano y largo plazo un archivo con certeza jurídica, sostenibilidad técnica y administrativa y accesibilidad para la investigación. El Consejo Consultivo Internacional, que se constituyó en marzo de 2007, está integrado por 15 expertas y expertos que en su mayoría son responsables de grandes proyectos archivísticos, culturales y técnicos. Son integrantes de este Consejo Consultivo Internacional nuestra querida compañera Kay Doyle y nuestro querido compañero Patrick Boll, que están también este día con nosotros. La función de este Consejo Consultivo Internacional es asesorar al archivo en diferentes acciones orientadas a vincular este esfuerzo con otras iniciativas mundiales relacionadas con la preservación de los archivos, la recuperación de la memoria histórica y la búsqueda de justicia para las víctimas. En el ámbito internacional, el archivo mantiene estrechas y muy importantes relaciones de colaboración con instituciones defensoras de los derechos humanos, archivos, museos memoriales y sitios de conciencia, centros de investigación y universidades de varios países. Formamos parte de la Coalición Internacional de Sitios de Conciencia, lo que nos ha vinculado de manera estrecha y permanente con prácticamente los lugares de conciencia, los memoriales, los museos de la memoria más importantes en el mundo. Y formamos parte también de la Organización Internacional Archiveros Sin Fronteras. En el año 2010, el colectivo de mujeres y hombres que está comprometido con la recuperación y apertura de este archivo histórico fue galardonado con el Premio Internacional en Derechos Humanos Letelier Moffitt. En junio de este año presentamos al pueblo de Guatemala el informe, el primer informe sistemático, analítico, que denominamos Del Silencio a la Memoria, que constituye también un aporte, una contribución muy importante, como se mencionó anteriormente, relacionándolo directamente como una continuidad, como una contribución al esfuerzo de la Comisión para el Esclarecimiento Histórico, que presentó el documento denominado Memoria del Silencio. No es simplemente un juego de palabras, es realmente el compromiso de darle cumplimiento a las recomendaciones de esa Comisión de la Verdad en Guatemala. Un grupo de aproximadamente 20 organizaciones sociales y académicas en Guatemala lograron una audiencia temática ante la Comisión Interamericana de Derechos Humanos en octubre pasado y plantearon la necesidad de que esta Comisión Interamericana haga una recomendación expresa al Estado de Guatemala para respetar este proceso de recuperación del archivo histórico de la Policía Nacional, entendiendo que este archivo no es un problema, es una oportunidad si realmente queremos que en Guatemala se avance en la construcción de la justicia de transición. Quiero concluir pues justamente valorando el carácter histórico que tiene este acto, el paso gigantesco que significa poner al alcance de cualquier persona en cualquier parte del mundo a cualquier hora estos millones de imágenes de documentos del Archivo Histórico de la Policía Nacional. Como dije en la mañana, esta es realmente la manera más grande y más amplia de democratizar el acceso a la información, absolutamente para todas y para todos, con lo cual le salimos al paso, con lo cual cerramos definitivamente cualquier duda, cualquier acusación sobre sesgos, sobre parcializaciones, sobre cualquier manera tendenciosa de trabajar con esta documentación. Ahí está la información y que todo el mundo pueda investigar y todo el mundo pueda hacer uso de su derecho a la verdad, y su derecho a la memoria, su derecho a la justicia. Y eso ha sido posible gracias a esta alianza, gracias a este espíritu de colaboración tan importante. Creo que también es un acto profundo de solidaridad, un término ya un poquito pasado de moda pareciera, un poquito en desuso, pero como ha dicho en algún momento Ernesto Cardenal, y creo que hoy se confirma, la solidaridad es la ternura de los pueblos. Gracias.
Thank you so much, Gustavo, for that inspiring overview of what this initiative is all about. I'd like next to call to the podium Fred Heath, who's the Vice Provost and Director of the University of Texas Libraries. It's been a personal source of satisfaction for me over the last couple months, since I assumed directorship of the Benson Collection, to work with Fred and to begin to learn from and participate in a process that he's leading, which is literally looking forward to the transformation of the libraries for the 21st century in form, in function, and in vision. And it's really quite an exciting process. I give you Fred Heath.
Thank you, Gustavo. At our best, research universities are remarkable crucibles of innovation. It's been my good fortune to fall to earth at this great university into these remarkable libraries among this amazingly talented library staff, and I guarantee you absolutely the best Latin American faculty on the face of this earth. So this tonight, where we in our community reach out in this modest way to extend the brilliant work and the heroic work that has been done in Guatemala by our colleagues on site and by our collaborators that you've met today from around this country and around this globe. Today is echoing Charlie's words, a personal milestone for me, and a terrific honor simply to share this podium with these great people today. Great research universities are in part what we're about tonight. They have libraries that, in support of teaching and research, carefully assemble the human record for use by generations of students and scholars, those on their own campuses and those from around the globe. With 10 million printed volumes in our collections and archival and manuscript collections of equal size, our resources here at the University of Texas may well represent the single most important intellectual asset of the state of Texas. They are one of the primary reasons that the University of Texas is able to attract and retain this amazing faculty and our graduate students. And our libraries are one of the reasons that the University of Texas is a destination for scholars from around the globe. In my travels in the past several months, I've traveled to the University of Belo Horizonte in Brazil and UNAM in Mexico, where senior administrative officials both recalled fondly their lengthy time in the Benson Collection conducting and furthering their own research. Yet, as Charlie mentioned, our jobs are changing. Increasingly in this age of the Internet, the human record is moving into digital space. Websites, born digital publications, and social networking have created an information universe thousands of times larger than the print world in which we are familiar and to which we have historically devoted our expertise and resources. But it is through these new forms in which information is cast that we now devote an increasing proportion of our capital and our intellectual assets. But in that amazingly huge digital world, we can't be everywhere. And because it is so vast, our libraries have had to direct and choose to direct available capability in support of university priorities. And it was that decision to focus on university priorities that led to us to focus our expertise in the two areas of human rights and of Latin America. And that decision has led us into amazing new rich partnerships in the space of the last few years, with the Burma Rangers Human Rights Group in Myanmar, with Aegis Trust in Rwanda, with partners in El Salvador, with Witness, with StoryCorps, with the American Congressional Black Caucus, and with other organizations. We find each other. Our interests are on universal discovery, preservation, and access, freeing scholars from the restrictions of geographical location or from their own limited ability to travel, following the lead of trailblazers like the National Security Archive. We harvest and preserve fragile and endangered web and other born digital resources, and where we can make them accessible via web browsers to people all around this globe. As one of my library colleagues reminded me recently, we have elected to embrace a disciplinary area that really matters. The fact that we have elected to dedicate our resources to the preservation and access of that most fragile portion of the human record, human rights, also ensures that we are directing our resources to the address and to the redress of an area of vital social concern. How fortunate we were that our preparations and our core values led to this epochal partnership with the Guatemala Historical National Police Archive, a partnership with Gustavo that Gustavo and Christian have outlined for you far more better than I here today. And how thankful we are that colleagues at the Police Archive, at the National Security Archive, at Benetech and elsewhere have worked so strenuously and so brilliantly for so long to create an amazing digital instantiation of that archive. And how critical it is that our faculty and our archivists have established that trusting relationship with our Guatemalan colleagues that will permit the location of that digital instantiation of the archive here forever. By that trusting partnership, we, in my estimation, achieve three things. We protect the physical archive itself from risk, for there is nothing to be gained from its removal or its neglect, as it will now exist in an accessible and permanently preserved digital space. Secondly, we would be able to go to work on bringing that digital archive to to bear on making the secrets of 12 million documents more powerfully accessible and discoverable to all. That's no simple task, as you heard from Christian. But it is an opportunity and a responsibility that our staff and our partners welcome and embrace. And finally, we open one more chapter of the human record to systematic inquiry and analysis for people around the globe. To relatives, as you've heard, looking for clues about a loved one. To scholars who study patterns and recurrences in the record of human rights violations. And perhaps to the legal community, who may find this archive right here, and our version of it, have a value in the pursuit of justice. I assure you that we in the UT Libraries and the Benson Latin American Collection accept the responsibilities that accompany this partnership with our Guatemalan colleagues and the broader human rights community. We salute your work with awe, and we look forward to a long and productive relationship. Thank you so very much.
It's an enormous pleasure to introduce our next speaker. He's been at this university since 1974. He came as a assistant professor of pharmacy and toxicology. It's an indication of the great importance that the university assigns this project, that Steve Leslie, Provost, Chief Academic Officer of the University of Texas, has made time in a very busy and ample schedule to be with us this evening and to provide us with his own perspective, a few words on the importance of this project. Please join me in welcoming Steve Leslie, Provost of the University, to the podium.
Thank you, Charlie. What a great day for the University of Texas. What a great day for Guatemala. What a great day for the faculty who are going to study this fabulous archive. What a great day for the students who will work with this world-class faculty from the university from around the world. And what a great day for the future of the understanding of the cultural importance of peace and prosperity. And what a great day for us to have a fabulous historical record that details so many things that happened to so many people and that can be studied in ways that will help us understand why this should never happen again, as said. Gustavo, I heard your comments about how this is already becoming important as an educational document in Guatemala in ways that you've never had before and perhaps in ways that are unique around Central America and perhaps in many places in the world. And I was sitting there and it reminded me of a book that I've been reading. It's called Saving Alma Mater. And it is a book about the problems that we're having in the United States and really, frankly, around the world. And public support for what higher education is all about. And the book was written by a former president of a university. He was a physicist that did his academic career at Ohio State. And he made the point in his book, and he used University of Texas at Austin as a prime example of what it means to be a powerful world stature research university. And he made the point that most of known knowledge resides in a great university like the University of Texas at Austin. And this is what this archive is all about. It is the deepest, most substantive historical record of the police archives of Guatemala. And yes, it is going to go on the website so that it has access for people around the world who want to look at it. And that's happening more and more, access to information to everybody who wants to find it. But the great benefit of this archive is that it has the world scholars who are working on it here at the university, partners in Guatemala from around the world, and those world scholars will organize it. And they will gather students who are some of the most enthusiastic and brightest young men and women from around the world, and together they will study it. And they will work together to reason about it, ethical considerations about it. And in the end, by having our partnership of students from Guatemala, students from the United States, students from other areas of Central America, students from around the world, with scholars from around the world, we'll understand and have deep impact on helping the world have access and truly understand what this archive means. In my mind, that is the benefit of an archive like this. Yes, it has access, and it should have access to anyone in the world who wants to see it, but it is the quality of the faculty and the commitment and dedication across the interface of the disciplines that will engage in studying it, and the students who will want to be with these faculty to really work on this that makes all the difference in the future of what this actually means. And while it is at the University of Texas at Austin, in partnership with this great country of Guatemala, where we already have these wonderful collaborations. So let me just give you, I'm the provost, and so, you know, I see every day the great faculty that we have and what it means to have a faculty who can attract students who are excited about the things that happen in a scholarly way and educationally at a place like this, and collaborations from around the world. We have exceptionally strong faculty here, already working in Guatemala and in a variety of areas that pertain to this and other things that can attend to it. You know many of these people. David Stewart in art, Nora England in linguistic, two of our preeminent faculty members, both recipients of MacArthur Genius Awards, with Guatemala as their principal research interests in the Mayan culture, in the Mayan civilization. Arturo Arias, Spanish and Portuguese, award-winning Guatemalan-born novelist and literary scholar. Virginia Gerard Burnett, history. Two books on Guatemala, career-long research focus on Guatemala. Brian Roberts, right before Charlie, he was leading LILAS. Brian Roberts, sociology. Started his career doing research in a marginal neighborhood in Guatemala. That was 40 years ago. And he's now returning to study there. Brian worked in Mexico for years, and now he's returning back to work and study these same people. Ariel Dulitsky, in law, expertise at the intersection of advocacy and research on the labor rights of Guatemalans who work under precarious positions there. Donna DeSeres, journalism. She carries out photojournalism projects in youth and violence in Guatemala. Charlie Hale, our director. Karen Engel. Dan Brinks, the program coordinators, along with research specializations in Guatemala, and they work on areas that are absolutely fabulous and directly related to this, and they will lead this. And the last, Richard N. Adams, anthropologist emeritus, former director of LILAS, and he's been a towering figure in the social science research in Guatemala since the 1950s. Well, for me, you know, it doesn't get any better than this. I think this is a fabulous thing. And I remember when the team walked into my office and told me for the first time that they had this archive. And I said, really? I said, that's fantastic. And I got it immediately. You know, I was a neuroscientist in my research career. And what hit me immediately when I saw what this archive was going back and in a completely different domain in neuroscience, seeing what this is going to represent. Because in neuroscience, it wasn't biochemistry, it wasn't physiology, it wasn't molecular biology. It was right at the interfaces of all those things where people with different interests across lines came together and worked, and the students came right along with them. And That is what energizes faculty, is working at the interfaces of things. This archive is fantastic, and it is exactly the kinds of things that this university will cherish. And it will keep us strong, and it will create more opportunities for us to collaborate with the world, with Guatemala, in making the world a better place. Let me just say that it is a sincere privilege for me to be here today. And my pledge to you, as long as I'm in this job, this is going to be a priority for the University of Texas at Austin. This is a great day for the University of Texas at Austin. Thank you all, sir.
Terrific to hear that pledge. That's music to our ears. I want to say, too, that Steve has a very direct experience and personal connection to Guatemala, having traveled there how many times? Two, three times?
I've been there twice so far, to the Casa Herrera, which is a place where all this can, in Antigua, where all this can have a home.
The Vice Provost, Janet Elzey, who's here, is also working very hard on the Casa Herrera to make that a key place for the University of Texas to carry out student programs, to carry out collaborative research, and to broaden exactly this kind of work. And so it's really a central location for the University of Texas in Latin America. We've come to the final portion of our ceremony. We have a great debt of gratitude to the law school, and particularly to the dean of the law school, Dean Larry Sager, who's opened this magnificent courtroom to our use today in the conference, and who I'd like to invite to the podium to provide some closing words. Dean Sager.
Thank you. It's late in the day, and I don't want to take a lot of time, but I want to say a word about the law school and this project. I want to acknowledge the remarkable people that are on each side of me here, and I want to acknowledge some important figures at the law school with regard to this. Of all of the law school's modern commitments, I think two of the most intense, arguably the two most intense, are a deep commitment to Latin America. We've remembered the continent of which we are a part, and it's a critical part of what we as an enterprise are about. And secondly, human rights. And so the intersection of those two things in this event is a matter of tremendous importance to the law school and to me personally. And I want to begin by acknowledging the people who've made this possible, in a sense, outside the law school. First, at this moment, as the conference closes, Gustavo and his associates for a tremendous amount of heroism and energy and endurance and generosity and cooperation of spirit. It's because of you that we're here, and we're all very grateful. Thank you. Secondly, the university's deep involvement in Latin America makes our involvement inevitable and far more attractive and powerful. And so I want to acknowledge and thank Fred Heath in his role heading up the astonishing library facilities and resources of this campus, and Charlie Hale, with Lilas and the Benson subcase of the library. When we talk about our great resources as a law school, we're constantly, directly and explicitly borrowing. So thank you very much. You. And finally, Steve Leslie, who's been deeply supportive of everything good at this institution, in good times and not so good times. And he's been absolutely wonderful to the law school and to me personally, and I want to thank you very much, Steve. But I want to close, and this will ultimately bring us back, I think, to the very beginning of your conference, with a reference to the law school and the people here that are connected with the law school, of whom I am very proud and to whom I'm very much in debt. One is Dan Brinks. He's theoretically a member of the government department, but in a variety of subtle and not so subtle ways, we are weaving him into our fabric. He's now co-director of the Rappaport Center. He will soon be, I'm quite confident, in at least nominally and maybe much more, a member of the law faculty. He teaches our students. He helped host this absolutely magnificent law review symposium on Latin American constitutionalism. When we think about our resources, we blot out that government part for a moment and welcome Dan into our community. And Dan, thank you so much. Second, Ariel Dulitsky, who I think of as our ambassador to Latin America, but it turns out that's a kind of remarkably self-centered and arrogant view, since he's one of the continents and world's leading advocates for human rights in Latin America, and that we have a piece of him at all is wonderful. But I'm very institutional-centric, and I think of him as our ambassador to Latin America and absolutely critical to the law school's growing and successful enterprises there. So, Ariel, thank you very much. And finally, this is my suggestion that I'm bringing you back to where you began with Karen Engel's welcome. Finally, and just of dominating importance, is Karen Engel. She's not just co-director of the Bernard and Audrey Rappaport Center for Human Rights and Justice. She's its creator, and she is, it's difficult, you can't formalize someone who is the lifeblood of an institution, and she is that. She also recently and belatedly received a chair from the law school, which she inherits in an absolutely formal way in about a month, but we've been committed to for a long time. It's the Minerva House Drysdale Reasons Chair of Law, and it is a much-deserved acknowledgement of Karen's scholarship, a scholarship which, as many of you know, produced recently a very important book. And if you have not seen this book from the Duke University Press, I commend it to you. I want to get its title right. It's The Elusive Promise of Indigenous Development, Rights, Culture, and Strategy. And it won the American Political Science Association's section on human rights 2010 award for the best book. And it is exactly that. Karen's fingerprint, energy, and heart are woven in to everything about this evening's project. And I'd like to acknowledge Karen for the extraordinary work she's done here and everywhere else. And finally, I want to thank you all for sharing this moment with us. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Dean Sager. What Dean Sager didn't say is that the law school is also hosting a reception for all of us. We're very grateful to the support and to the welcome that we're going to have to celebrate the end of this very long day. So with this, I'd like to close the formal part of our conference. To again thank everyone for what was really an incredible, intense, moving day of presentations, much to talk about, much to ruminate on, and a whole lot of work to do in the future to realize and make good on the the promise that this this collaboration offers. So thank you all for being here. You're all cordially welcome to a reception that will take place in the atrium starting right now.